It's time for Twig This Week in Google. There is a lot to talk about. The new phones are coming. The Essential is available. Can somebody make money charging only $10 a month for movies? And what about this website everybody's taken down? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 418, recorded Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. I want a three-tier Tiffin. This Week in Google is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twig and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from, you know, all the Google-versy things, Facebook, Twitter, Google. Hey, look who's here, Mike Elgin, the Google Plus King.
That's right.
Mike Elgin's from GastroNomad.net, longtime tech journalist, a former editor of Windows, PC.
Windows Magazine.
Windows.
Windows Magazine, for those of you who remember.
The good old days.
Yes, nice back when Mike. People read computer magazines. Weren't those the days?
Wow. There are still some paper computer magazines.
Yeah, but you know, they're not the big force.
I miss
that they
computer
were.
Shoppers, what I miss. You could build furniture.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A year's worth of computer shopper, you got a nightstand.
It was amazing.
Also with us, Stacey Higginbotham, back from vacation. You look so rested and happy.
Ta-da!
Did you have a great time?
Oh, I did. Always.
You were in the Pacific Northwest?
I was, and it was so much cooler and nice.
Yeah. You should move up here. It's nice.
I believe that.
It's
yes.
nice up here. You did. Do you mind if I show this picture? It's from your Twitter, so obviously you.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is Stacy doing circus training on a trapeze, hanging upside down.
And like 20 seconds later, I dropped my hands and hung there and swung back and forth.
Oh,
and it was awesome.
Crazy. Did Andrew do it? Just you and your daughter?
No, just my daughter.
I have more respect for your husband now than I did before. That's insane. You're nuts.
It was awesome.
Well, the reason this came up, we were talking about roller coasters, and you did the California Screamin' at Disney's America. What is it? All America Park or something? California.
Yeah.
And you did it 8 times in a row.
Yeah, we did. It was late at night, and we just
you're a daredevil
went circling through.
You're a daredevil.
Coasters are safe.
I guess they
and
are.
My daughter loves roller coasters, and so does my husband. So it's like a bonding activity.
I went to high school in Santa Cruz where they have the Big Dipper, which is an old wooden roller coaster, one of those classic old coasters. And people would die on it from time to time.
Yeah, you lose a few tourists once in a while.
It made it a more interesting experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not guaranteed you're going to come back. It just adds a little dollop.
A little soupçon of excitement.
Soupçon of excitement. That's exactly. I'm glad Jeff Jarvis isn't here. Apparently, he's still in an apoplectic fit or something. I don't know. Hey, you know what the great thing is about President Trump?
What's that?
We're not going to be talking about the Google memo today.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
Instead, we're going to be talking about the Daily Stormer.
Yeah, wow. But they did. You know what? That was kind of neat. So the Daily Stormer has been around for ages.
Yeah.
And it is a neo-Nazi website. I don't think they would even. The funny thing is they wouldn't even cavil at that. They would say, yeah, you're right. We're a neo-Nazi website.
Yeah.
They were one of the websites that encouraged the violence in Charlottesville, told people to go armed with shields and helmets.
And people did.
And they did. I think that's safe to say is encouraging violence.
They had stashes of weapons buried all over the city.
Now, the thing that's interesting is they've been hosted by GoDaddy for years.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
But I guess this was a bridge too far, or is just, I think more, it's just too much publicity now, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to, eventually the white supremacists are going to have their own host, something like Go Adolf or something like that.
Because Good nobody's Daddy
gonna,
Hitler.
Yeah, nobody's going to take them.
Kyle Hitler service.
So they got kicked off of GoDaddy. They went to Google for 3 hours, got kicked off there.
It was a good 3 hours, though. They had high performance
And they went from there to, I think they're now on the dark web. They have a .onion address. Is that right? But still somebody has to host them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we know who hosts them?
They'll find a host. I don't know who hosts them at present. Maybe the chat room does. But, I think it's not impossible to find a host somewhere in the world. It can be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And
some people host it out of support for free speech, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah, Russian. Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah.
Russian help. It's found a home on the Russian internet after the American tech companies refused to host it. They couldn't even, host the domain
name.
Lots
and lots of things are censored on the Russian internet. But
not that,
this
apparently.
Is
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Ha ha funny.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Okay. Anything more to say?
I'm like, okay, well, we covered that one.
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's interesting that, so this event is seen as a very negative thing, and there is a plus side to it, which is exactly what's happening.
It sure has.
They're being shunned from polite
society.
Yeah,
it's really interesting because there's, as I said, this is not a news site. There's groups like this on Reddit. They've survived, although Reddit has now pulled down a number of them. So I think, by becoming more than just a kind of a jokey background noise, people take them more seriously. And as soon as they're taken more seriously after Charlottesville, then they get pulled down. Now, there's an interesting debate, and I'm very curious what you think about this, because their site, I guess, I presume their Russian site as well, goes through Cloudflare. It has DDoS and attack protection from Cloudflare. Cloudflare says, they won't say anything specific about that site, but they say we serve anybody who wants to because...
But I heard they dropped them now.
Have they dropped them?
I believe they have.
They said it because... And I think I kind of support this. Oh, good for Cloudflare. Good for Cloudflare. I think they kind of support this. I understand why they do, because they say you wouldn't say to the electric company, turn off that guy's electricity. He's a Nazi. Or to the phone company, don't allow phone companies by racist people. They're common carriers, and so they are historically neither responsible nor expected to be aware of the kind of content. And I think that was Cloudflare's point of view for a while, anyway.
The difference is that there's a stigmatization of a company that attends that. So certainly they have the right to continue to host anyone they want, but they're going to lose some business. And it's just bad business.
Yeah, you could be a cynical and say, yeah, GoDaddy and Google didn't mind having them. Well, Google didn't have them for a customer for very long, but GoDaddy didn't mind having them for a customer because until it became a business liability as opposed to, well, good for Cloudflare. I have to say, I want to fair disclosure. They have been a sponsor, and they had ads today, and we contacted them. He said, can't do an ad for you today or ever. Now, actually, I had told Lisa if they change their mind, we'd love to have them back. So, good. I'm really thrilled to hear that. Actually,
It's awesome. And really, I think the most important thing is not laws against these types of groups. I think it's social stigmatization is the key.
Ultimately,
scorn
that's
and ridicule.
Make a difference. Scorn and ridicule.
Yeah,
I think that's exactly right.
I think also, I think, and I'm sorry to keep stepping over you, Stacey, there, but just one quick point, and then I'll turn it over. But basically, Google and these other companies, GoDaddy, have been hosting them for years, but I think they may be in the same boat I am. I never realized how serious these guys were. Like, I knew that...
That's what I meant. They were jokey background noise.
I just thought they were just a bunch of whiny...
For years, we've had... I'm sorry. Stacey, go ahead.
I'm like, guys, I'm not in the studio.
That's your disadvantage, and I'm sorry.
Just going to say, I'm going to throw something out there because I think that this idea of being a common carrier is something that even Cloudflare says this. A lot of people say that about Google and Facebook and even things like somewhat Twitter, disbarring people from the platform based on their beliefs isn't a good idea. And this isn't just neo-Nazi people. This is other people. And the question then becomes, where do you stop ostracizing folks? It's very clear to say Nazis are bad, right? I'm not arguing that Nazis are bad or good. But, if you have, I'm trying to think of what group is next to Nazis, but not as bad as Nazis.
Well, but they're just politically...
Men's rights groups.
Men's rights. There you go.
Okay, but if men's rights groups start committing acts of terrorism...
Once they advocate violence and terrorism, that's crossing the line.
That's right. This event that took place...
There's no free speech if you're advocating violence. That's not protected speech.
That is not protected speech, inciting violence. So, and that's a good thing to keep in mind is how do we think about that? Although I would say men's rights groups incite violence. They offer ways to drug women to rape them, which I feel is a pretty violent act.
Absolutely. But that's the basis on which you ban them. You don't ban them because they believe in men's rights or whatever it is. You ban them if the site openly advocates certain things. You ban the people. But if the site or the group or whatever sort of goes along with those kinds of practices, you got to ban it because that's just, you know, you're inciting violence against people. And that's, you know, I think that's becoming the universal standard for banning and blocking and censoring and stuff like
but,
that.
But, well, to defend, see, but would you expect the power company to cut off their power?
Well, this is the telecoms argue this when they're talking about, they say that that Google and Facebook all should have to follow some of the same rules they do about being a common carrier. This is an argument I don't necessarily agree with, but this is what they talk about when we're talking about net neutrality.
Just because they're politically challenging. I mean, you know, some would look at Hobby Lobby didn't want to offer birth control to its employees because that was, they claimed, I don't know if I buy it, religiously against their religious beliefs. That's different.
Sure, and you have things like, and again, I'll go to MRA groups. There are definitely places right now, sites that Google hosts or GoDaddy hosts that would tell you like, hey, here's how you get a woman to have sex with you without consent.
Right, right. That's not good. But now Cloudflare hosts, hosts isn't the right word because they don't host. Yeah. They protect something like 30% of, tens of millions. Yeah. Of sites, they could reasonably, I think I understand why they could reasonably say, well, if we get in the business of saying, well, this one, but not that one, that's a tough, never ending battle. Right. So I understood their point of view.
To me, it's kind of responsible.
I'm glad, you know what? I'm glad they did the right thing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did it. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to give them a free ad in this show because I'm glad they did that.
Yeah.
And we had ads for them earlier today that we decided not to do, but we're going to give them a Cloudflare thank you. You did the right thing. Matthew Prince, their CEO, I think was taking what he believed was a principled stand.
Yeah.
Principled stand. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, the price is too high.
So here's the thing that's different between Google, for example, and the power company. The power company provides heat. You know, you can make food. It's like necessary for your survival. What Google does is a massive and historically brand new amplifier. So if you think of the recruitment that ISIS has done on the internet, and you realize that, you know, yes, ISIS-type people have always existed, but they used to be powerless. They used to be sitting in some place with no ability to affect global change. Now they can use the internet to spread their ideas, to recruit. And this is what's happening with our domestic terrorists as well. They're recruiting, they're spreading this stuff using the internet, using Google, using social apps and all that kind of stuff. So do we really want to just empower everybody with this enormous capability to spread, you know,
We should
violence?
Also point out that the First Amendment does protect Nazis and Ku Klux Klan in that government is not allowed to make a law against
them.
And the exemption, as we pointed out, is if you yell fire in a crowded theater, I think it was Justice Brandeis's famous example, that's not protected because that's dangerous.
Right.
And that's what I was going to say is I remember for years Ku Klux Klan, little tiny groups of 12 people in the town square, and everybody would kind of mock them and laugh at them. There was never any violence. They just do their little thing and they go off.
Yeah.
And it was tolerated in the name of free speech. A lot of people didn't like it,
right,
but it was tolerated in the name of free speech. They got a permit and they were allowed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The right thing to do would be to surround their protest with peaceful
with more speech
counter protesters with more speech. It's different though. On the net is, see, we're terra incognita. This is a very different world.
Yeah.
Should Cloudflare, does Cloudflare now have to block? Let's say they protect ISIS sites. I don't know that they do. I'm not saying they do. Mm-hmm. But they have to then, now they have to go and look for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing with the algorithmically sorted internet, which is almost the entire internet these days, when you're going for content, is that it's a dumb beast that we haven't figured it out yet. So essentially,
it's very challenging.
Let's say you know,
Does Google block Daily Stormer search results?
I don't know, but I think to a certain extent they should, because what happens is if you have a certain thing that you look into a lot, it'll give you more of it and more of it and more of it. And the more you get into this rabbit hole, the more extreme the content. You can follow that all the way to the worst parts of YouTube, for example, where...
Right, but you have to have people allowed to search for that for research purposes, for government purposes. With search results. Oh, Jeff would love this.
This is we're not going to come to the answer here. I think we've demonstrated how tough this is.
It is, yeah, absolutely, and it's a tough call. And what are you gonna, and then you have the issue of international. You know, different nations have different values. Only the U.S. has the First Amendment. Other countries have different takes on free speech. In Germany, for example, most of the T-shirts these guys were wearing would have put them in jail.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really, really tough thing to do.
It's interesting though, by going so far. And, you know, plowing a car into a band of counter-protesters, for instance, and killing one and injuring many. You're right. They raised the level. Yeah. So while people were tolerating this, the minute that happened, I think it shifted.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the country, it's interesting to watch what happened today. The country shifted, not just Google and GoDaddy and Cloudflare. The country shifted.
Absolutely. It's a clarifying moment. It sort of forces everybody to really think about this stuff and to understand what's really going on out there. And again, I think the internet is a key part of what's different. It's a big, big deal.
If you search right now for Daily Stormer on Google, you get, of course, mostly what you get is news stories about this whole issue right now. But you will get stories that link to the Daily Stormer. You're one link away from the Daily Stormer, which incidentally, according to Ars Technica, is down because as soon as Cloudflare pulled their DDoS protection.
They got hammered.
They immediately got hammered.
And now that you've searched for it, you're going to get advertisements for white hoods and the torches that they have
sell at Lowe's. All the sheet ads alone.
The torches.
Oh, my God. All right. It's such a grim subject. I don't want to belabor it. I think we've demonstrated how hard this is to solve. And I do think there is an argument for common carrier status. For some of these, I think we may be asking too much of these companies.
Not for anything that's algorithmic, because if there's an algorithm rewarding you for with more of the same content, then that's not a neutral thing. Electricity is neutral; it doesn't draw you deeper
rabbit
hole.
DDoS protection is in. That's an interesting point. Yeah, you are doing something. Now, Cloudflare got in a little bit of trouble because in the past what they had done is if somebody complained about a Nazi site, they would send the complaint on to the Nazis, including email address, and open those complainants up for harassment. Now, they stopped doing that almost immediately as soon as that happened.
Yeah.
But that shows you this is freaking complicated, and I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Cloudflare, for solving this for us anyway by doing the right thing.
You want to talk about the Pixel phone? Because you know how I am super psyched about next generation Google phones.
Hey, I got some good news. I got an email this morning from Andy Rubin saying your Essential phone is ready.
Oh, wow. There's an
good
event.
Good timing, Andy. I can't wait.
There's actually an event Friday.
For Essential?
Yes.
Okay. And of course, and I ordered it and I should have it within 7 days. So I made a deal with Jason Hallett all about Android. I said, if it comes by Tuesday, you can have it for All About Android. You can have it and use it on All About Android. If it comes after that, it's mine. But the problem is I don't think either of us are going to want to hold on to it for too long. We should just say Andy Rubin, who's created Android, the operating system, sold it to Google, ran Android for many years, eventually moved on in Google to do something else, then left Google, and this was his next act as a Android phone.
And before all that was Sidekick.
Sidekick, that's right. Yeah. I mean, he's got great credentials. But what can you do? You know,
Is he a one-hit wonder?
Well, it's not even... I don't think it's that. I think he's a genius. He's okay. Brilliant. What can you do today with an Android phone that would be in any way different?
Yeah.
It's really a challenge.
Yeah.
He's doing the Motorola thing with he's got this the Poco
crazy
pins in the back
camera.
So you can attach not just cameras but other things. Yeah. He's a bezel-less design. I have to say that. You would be nuts to buy a phone with a bezel. You'll look so 2016.
Yeah.
Wait, no, the Google phone, the new FCC filing for
Pixel
the Pixel
S
2.
Has
Pixel? No, looks like it has a bezel.
Oh, crap. Google.
Has to be said also that Black Moon is a great name for something shipping around the time of the eclipse.
Ooh.
Is it true?
Ooh. That's the code name, Black Moon? Well, it's really the Black Sun.
That's true.
The eclipse is the sun.
Well,
essentially
okay.
Knocked out by the moon.
The essential phone, you could get Pure White or Black Moon.
Yeah, I ordered Black Moon.
That's a color.
Yeah. Maybe it'll come on Monday. That'd be fun if it came during the eclipse. Is Andy Rubin that clever?
The sun would come back and there's a package.
So did the FCC filing have... Oh, this is one thing.
The FCC filings for the Pixel 2. So just not to confuse things more. So we're talking about the essential phone.
Okay, we're done for... No, we're done with the essential phone.
No, we can't be done because they raised
more?
$300 million.
What?
Well, we talked about them raising their money.
WUT.
We talked about this last week, didn't we? The essential
phone
raising
money. I'm just pretending it's news. It's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. But now they're a unicorn. They haven't shipped a phone.
Oh, wow.
I look at the phone and I'm like... How can you be worth $1 billion when you haven't? Did they? I mean, were there lots of people like you?
Well,
I don't.
I think that the money raised was not the phone. It was they have a smart home.
Their
part,
home.
Right?
Their smart home thing isn't even coming. I mean, that's the least fleshed out part of it.
I think the value is Andy Rubin himself. Everything that he's created, he's sold.
It's bought by.
For huge amounts of money. So.
Ooh, they're going to have a docking station.
Uh-huh.
But he did Danger, and that was like a $500 million deal, wasn't it?
Yeah, but
it?
That was back in the days before...
That was a unicorn for those times.
Yeah, that was a lot of money back then.
Got it.
That guy's...
They
the
say you touch. Can drop it.
Wait, is this the essential, or are we done with that
the
now?
The essential. No, I'm not done with it. It's made out of titanium, not aluminum.
Yeah.
If you say aluminium, do you say titanium?
I think you should. just out of fairness.
Hey, Brits.
Wait, call Johnny Ives.
Hey, Brits. It's made of titanium. Really? What? I mean, honest. If it's aluminium. All right. I'm just saying. Now they have other colors, too. I got Black Moon. They have Pure White, Stellar Gray, and Ocean Depths is pretty.
That's Puke Green.
Puke Green, okay.
I feel like Stellar Gray is such an oxymoron.
Yeah. You hear that, yeah.
So is Black Moon. Well, not really. You can't see it, but it's black. With the essential phone, stunning edge-to-edge display. This is the one with the notch, although, you know, that notch is going to look prescient when the next iPhone comes out because it has... Yeah. A bigger notch, supposedly, what we've seen in the middle, because it has to accommodate all those extra sensors. And
then
stuff.
Samsung will come out with the biggest notch in the industry.
Got the new super notch, the note notch. I ordered it. It's $800 or something. It's ridiculously expensive.
It's ridiculously cheap compared to the upcoming iPhone.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're trying to do is have a really premium Android phone.
We'll have a review for you by next show. Now this is the home base. This is where I think the investment is. This looks like a Nest kind of. It's got a screen face, but it's sitting down instead of on the wall.
But he wants it to run all of the assistants.
Well, you're the IoT person, Stacey. You think this is credible?
Well, he hasn't said enough for me to determine if it's credible. Right. I mean, the data on the home is like, it'll be magic. Everything will talk to everything else. And I've heard that 1,000 times. So I'm kind of like, maybe. I imagine if I could get my hands on an investor deck, there'd be information that I could use and be like, oh, it really is worth $1 billion.
Well, we'll see. I think this is a very bad time to be a new phone. That's all I can say. Yeah. You got the
it's
note.
It's a very bad time to be a smart home, too. I mean, honestly, this is the year of the winnowing. Of the smart home.
Smart home. The winnowing. That's after The Conjuring. Because you're saying that because of Apple, the home hub?
No, I'm saying of it because there's a lot of companies that got money have either died or been acquired. Yeah. It's time.
Yeah. It's been time for a long time. This is next to the PC TV convergence. This has been the most overhyped and underdelivered technology category in
history. And wearables too. I think the wristwatch wearable revolution kind of went.
Yeah.
And everybody thought that was going to be enormous, that everybody be wearing a smartwatch.
So
I was going to say, everybody thought this?
Well,
I'm wearing one, but I'm an idiot.
I'm wearing a Fitbit.
I think a smartwatch is a demonstration you're not so smart.
Yeah, it's
like you fell for it.
You're right.
You fell for the marketing.
Sucker!
I shouldn't say that. I know many of you
It's a $400 device that gives you $25 worth of value.
Yeah, I'll show you how smart I am. I bought the $1,200 device. This is the edition, the ceramic. Because
it's
thought
a
ceramic
thing of beauty.
I think ceramic, I'm as interested in the material.
Yeah.
And it, you know, too.
It does look cool.
It hasn't scratched. All right, but my original point is, what a crappy time to release a phone, Andy. You've got the Note 8 is going to be announced on Wednesday, probably for pre-order and delivery. Typically, Samsung announces you order and you get it pretty quickly, like the next week or two. So right. The Note 8 is going to hit the market. And the reason they want to hit the market now is because the iPhone will be announced within a month, almost certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Latest iPhone.
And it's going to be fancy.
Schmancy. It ought to be for... more than $1,000. There'll be three. So the latest thinking is there'll be three iPhones. There'll be something equivalent to a 7 Plus. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, 7S and a 7S Plus. And then there'll be the iPhone 10 or iPhone Pro or maybe just iPhone.
Right.
Those are the three names yesterday on last MacBreak Weekly we talked about. Those are the potentials. I'm going for the Pro because they've announced an iMac Pro.
Right. And they have the iPad Pro.
I'm going for iPhone Pro.
Yeah.
No matter what.
So you're pro all the way.
Yeah.
You are professional grade.
I'll be pro.
Yeah.
It's like one of those armor sets you get in World of Warcraft. You got to collect the whole pro set if you want to be fully protected.
It's exactly like that.
I have the myth of witchcrafting armor set and the boots of Legionnaire's disease. I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Back to your point, though. I mean, what I'm curious about is Andy Rubin is a really smart guy.
He's a smart guy.
Sidekick and Android were both completely out-of-the-box products.
And great. I loved my Sidekick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
so
way ahead of its time.
There's got to be something about this phone that we don't know about yet that justifies its existence. It can't just be another Android phone. It can't. Made out of titanium.
I fear it might be. We're such peak phone. It's hard to imagine what you would do. If you have an ecosystem, a massive ecosystem as Apple does, you could push people to AR kit.
Right.
You can't, as Andy Rubin, with a phone nobody has, push people into whatever it is he's hoping to create a platform for. There's no way this can be a platform. You don't have enough clout.
Yeah.
I think timing is, and you might have made the same argument with Sidekick. The timing on that was it was too early.
Right.
This might be too late.
Yeah.
And then, so let's talk about the Pixel. So Google's Pixel phones, the Pixel 2, are not expected to be out. What's the latest? You said they just went for FCC approval?
Yeah, there was an FCC filing for the HTC Google Pixel 2. So we're not sure.
The big one LG. And the HTC will be the little one. The thinking is that HTC is going to put its dopey squeeze me feature in the
little. It is.
Dopey. It says that in the, it does. It says in the filing.
It says the Active Edge, squeeze feature is part of the filing. So why do you call it dopey? I'm curious because I loved my Moto because it had those kind of shortcuts.
Gestures.
The
Moto X. I love the gestures.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. The Moto X, if you shook it like this, it would launch the, twist your wrist, it would launch the camera.
Yeah.
What was the flashlight? Was it V?
You just shook it twice or something.
Oh, I thought that was the camera.
No, the camera was, you just twisted it.
Okay, this is, by the way, we are now illustrating the problem. no, you did this, and then you did this.
Yeah.
And I would always turn the flashlight on by accident. So
the
this squeeze.
Was karate chop.
That's what it was.
That's how I always do. I was like, yeah. Karate chop.
There was another one. What was the other one?
I just did the camera and the karate chop.
I think it was when you picked it up, it just turned on or something like that.
Yeah.
Or if you put it down, the phone would hang out. Something like that. But the point is that those kinds of things are theoretically cool. I think where we're headed because of AR, we're getting all these, like there's a rumor that the next iPhone will have a laser in it, but all these phones will have ways to detect what's going on in 3D and space and distance, which means we'll be able to use in the air gestures. The phone on the table will be able to like swipe through things by doing this. Some phones already do that, of course, but those will become more sophisticated, I think. And that's going to be pretty great.
I don't have a problem with gestures, but they have to be organic. They have to be fit into, for instance, most Android phones have a gesture where if you shake it, when you're so angry, it then pops up a
tech support
bug. Yeah. Bug report.
Yeah.
That seems organic and natural because you're already pissed off and you're shaking your gosh phone. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of things weren't originally organic. So remember turning on the iPhone, pinch to zoom, swiping.
Those feel, do you think that felt unusual at the time? Pinching is what's happening. You're making it bigger. That's natural.
Well, you know, yes and no.
I'm not pleasuring myself.
I'm afraid to ask, but what else gets bigger when you pinch it? I mean, it's like
I know it looks odd, but what I'm trying to do is I just feel like that's exactly right. You want to make that bigger, you go like that.
But it is a natural.
That's a perfect example of an organic gesture.
But why is that natural? What else in the world does that?
Well,
nothing
everything
else.
Should.
That's the point. Well, the point is Apple picked a gesture that made sense for people.
Actually, Apple and maybe, didn't pick it. It predated Apple, but anyway. Yeah.
Sorry. You're right. Sorry. But the gesture there made sense. And I don't know if it was organic so much as they picked something that seemed more natural. Now, I think that, I mean, I'll be honest. I think that turning your phone around to open the camera does seem kind of natural because you're looking at it and you're like, whoop, or whoop.
That's the challenge, though, because you can't do it just once because that would happen accidentally. Yeah. So you have to do it twice.
I think you just did it. I feel like you just did it once.
I want the camera to take a selfie when I do it.
You just had to have enough, like, flair.
Here's a good example. How about double tap to zoom? Does that seem... And that was something that Apple did invent for Safari. Mm-hmm. So you could be looking at a web page, and a web page on a small screen would be too small. You double tap the paragraph, and it brilliantly zoomed just to fill the screen just right.
Yeah,
that wouldn't. I guess that would be one where that wouldn't be a natural gesture, but we quickly incorporated it.
Yeah.
So okay. So the counterexample is, I think, proves that you could have a gesture that isn't natural but does become part of the vocabulary, and you do need to expand the user interface vocabulary, mm-hmm. especially with things like phones and watches where you're really limited. So squeeze, to get back to squeeze, what does squeeze do? I know it on the HTC.
Builds your forearm muscles. It's like a fitness.
You squeeze the phone. It has to be.
Release the stress.
Right. The gesture has to be something that comes natural, is at least, if it's not organic, at least makes sense after you do it a few times, but isn't triggered accidentally. And I guess I feel like I squeeze my phone a lot. Like you're holding it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you would hold it harder. Maybe not.
Well, maybe, I mean, if you're on.
Does anybody in the chat room have one of these HTC, what is it, the 11? I'm curious what it does. Anyway, HTC will build this into the new Pixel 2 small version. It's the U11. It's branded as Active Edge. It's in the languages input and gestures setting.
Like a macro you can program?
Well, maybe it is, but on delivery it launches the Google Assistant. That I like. Hmm. It's not intuitive, but maybe it would be, because you need an easy way to launch the assistant, and it can't be okay, you know who.
Yeah. Right.
That's problematic.
Right.
All right. So you squeeze it. Now, but what's going to be weird is the bigger Pixel made by LG will not have that feature, I don't think. Storage is listed as 50 gigabyte. This is all from the FCC filing. 50 gigabytes free. When 21% is used, that means, it's a 64 gig capacity. The device's processor is likely to be a... It's either a Snapdragon 660 or an 835. It could be an 835, right? It's got to be the 835. That's, they know that because the Qualcomm Wi-Fi chip used only works with those two Snapdragons. So it'll be an 835. I don't think there's any information about screen resolution or actual size. Let's see here. Be model G011A, made in Taiwan. These are the screenshots. This is, oh, they have to show, I guess, the FCC where you would find the legal information. The FCC very kindly allowed phone manufacturers to stop printing that on the back of the phone. It was so ugly. But you have to still show them that you've got that information and where it's hiding, I guess, under legal information. All right. Well, I guess that's all we know. But if the... Okay, so FCC... Okay, here's a question. How long does FCC approval take? You're not...
A lot of times... Well, a lot of times you don't file with the FCC until you're ready to launch it, is historically what companies do, because this outs what you're doing.
Right. So it's ready, but it can't be delivered until you get FCC approval.
Right. But that can take as little as like a week to a month. And if you're like a vendor like HTC or LG and know what you're doing. Unless you've got some weird bits and bobs in there. But then you could redact everything. If they didn't redact everything, I got to think that.
And they are in a hurry because they're going to have a few good, short period of time before the iPhone hits.
Well, remember last year, both Google and Samsung announced right before the Apple event.
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't think Google's going to be able to do it before. I mean, Apple's event will, this is the 16th.
Yeah.
It will almost certainly be in the next month.
But I don't.
By September 16th. But
I don't think they're going to ship the Superphone on that day. I think they're going to say, it comes out in November.
It's funny. There's been back and forth on that. The latest supply chain rumors from Ming-Chi Kuo, who has been pretty good once you get this close, especially with supply chain things, is that all three phones will ship at the same time.
And how does he not call his site the Status Quo? That's a perfect name.
Because he works for some other company. some analyst, some securities company.
You know, and that's very possible, but maybe they all ship in November. It just seems like the way the rumors are, the rumors about they're still deciding on various things.
That's always true, but we're getting close now.
Yeah, I mean,
I will be willing to bet that Apple will be on a normal schedule. Their parent, according to, again, to Kuo, they are in ramped up production on them, all three models. So I've seen leaked videos of them. So I'm going to guess that usually they do it, they have to wait till after Labor Day. So they would do it on the Wednesday after Labor Day typically.
Yeah.
Which would be this year, I think we said September 8th. Let me look at my calendar. And then, so September 6th is the Wednesday after Labor Day. Rene Ritchie, I think, thought maybe they'd throw everybody a monkey wrench and do it on the 8th, the Friday.
Yeah.
Or if they want to wait, then the Monday or Tuesday after that, which would be the 11th or 12th. Typically, in the past, and this has been true for several years, they will say pre-orders on Friday, delivery 2 weeks after that.
Do we know if they are ready to announce and use the Steve Jobs amphitheater at Apple Park?
I asked that too, because that's the, and I'd be shocked if they weren't. It's the 10th anniversary iPhone.
The thing to understand about that is genius for secrecy. You can announce the event the day before.
Right.
And everybody would show up, and you'd have no people taking pictures of the banners and stuff like that in San Francisco. So
the campus is being occupied. In fact, it's not a Google story, but that's one of the stories, is that people who hate it.
They hate it. The open plan was a really bad idea.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh. That's sad.
People always hate new offices. Yeah,
that's not that unusual.
But open plans are particularly irritating.
Yeah, they're a bad idea. This is not the one I want to show.
And somebody in the chat room said that the Apple Park isn't ready and stuff like that. They haven't planted grass and stuff like that. But
that doesn't matter.
The amphitheater is kind of a separate thing. It's on the property, but the parking for it is outside the property. So when there is an event, you park sort of across the street, and then they shuttle you in, or there's a secret tunnel, or I don't know how you get there. But basically, it doesn't matter if the rest of the campus is available, is ready to go or not. The amphitheater is its own thing, and nobody knows how done that is.
Now, this is about 3 weeks old. They've actually stopped drones now from flying over.
Yeah.
So this is the last drone. This is Duncan Sinfield's. There's, by the way. Oh, it's done. It's ready.
Look at that.
Look in there. That, I would say, that's this. The Steve Jobs Theater is
that's,
the little.
It's the staircase where you go down into the.
Yeah, and we can't. We'll never know. You see the staircase there. We'll never know what's underground, whether that's ready, because we can't see it. But exactly. I think this is ready.
Yeah, it looks pretty ready.
That was 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now, of course that'll be ready.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's going to be muddy and dirty, but they'll. I would.
Oh, then it may not be ready by Apple standards.
That's interesting.
I mean.
Boy, this is a chance to get a lot of press for your campus.
Yeah.
It is the 10th anniversary iPhone.
Yeah.
They do have that problem if they want to get, Flint Center, which is probably where they would have it in San Jose.
Right.
They'd have to book it already.
Yeah. I mean, really, they don't, for the exterior, the parts where they would allow the riffraff press to wander around, they don't. They're going to plant grass.
You could put turf on this and have it ready
exactly.
Tomorrow.
They're going to roll it out like a rug.
The trees are all in. They're not going to bring them into the inner circle. In fact, that's part of the. In fact, that is the thing that Andy Iannocco and Renee Witchie on our MacBreak Weekly said would be the thing that would hold it up is if they weren't able to control journalists and keep them right. In the Steve Jobs Theater area.
That's, you don't want Renee Ritchie anywhere near this campus until it's completely done.
Yeah, you don't want. But on the other hand, what a. I mean, I'm sure this is what they've been shooting for.
Yeah.
It would be a bit of a letdown if they couldn't do this,
right?
I would think.
But we've all. I mean, if you've ever built anything, you know that.
And I haven't.
It's kind of like you're like they'll be like you'll be in by Christmas or you'll be in by this date, and then a permit gets delayed or a contractor gets sick or.
Tell me
whatever.
If I'm wrong. Now somebody's saying, "Oh, you can't have people until there's an occupancy license," but they are putting employees in, right?
Yes, they are.
So they have an occupancy license.
I think they do.
So
I think they do. So I think it's, I mean, really it's, the external parts of it look less, like we're saying, they look less done than they actually are. They're just,
they
have grass. To move the mounds of dirt, move the trucks off and put some grass down. They're pretty much done.
That stuff always looks bad right up to the day.
Right.
And there is a lot, like, again, anytime you move into a renovation or a renovated office, new office, new home, whatever, there's always that last 10% that is like
I know
takes forever.
I know, it's so true. You did you build your house or just remodel?
No, we built it.
You built it, so you know
we built it. Oh God, it was.
But I would also say that it also just before occupation looks like they're never going to get this done, and then boom, it's suddenly done.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. The two most surprising things about building a house are framing, because that's like super fast, and you're like, whoa,
it's done.
There's a house there. Yeah. Wow. And then like the week before you move in when like, there's electric, wires hanging out of walls and crap everywhere. And you're like, this isn't going to happen.
So. I love really being completely unhandy and not knowing anything because it's just magic to me.
Yeah. It's a miracle. Nobody knows how it works.
It's like David Copperfield. He made a house appear.
Yeah.
Sure. It took 9 months longer and $100,000 more, but he made it happen.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Magic.
Let's take a break. Stacey Higginbotham is here. I didn't really give you a good enough plug at the beginning. IoTpodcast.com for her show that she does with the beautiful, talented, and ever so lovely Kevin Toefel. How's Kevin doing?
He's doing really well. I talked to him this morning.
Good. I know. This is podcast day in the Higginbotham house.
This is like, this is all production all the time. At the end of this, I have a drink and I like sit down and I'm like, I don't talk to anyone in my family.
Now you know how I feel
I'm
every
out.
Freaking day of my life.
It's a hard job, man.
Every day, baby. Stacey also writes about IoT at her by the way, highly recommend the newsletter and the site, StaceyOnIoT.com. It's really good. She is one of the smartest journalists out there. And if Mike Elgin still ran PC Windows Magazine, I would say hire this woman.
And
but he doesn't.
Would. But I don't. Sorry.
Instead, what a life. He travels the world.
I do.
Writes columns for Computer World, Fast Company.
Fast Company.
see him on Google Plus, on the Twitter, on the Instagram, and he and his wife Amira have this thing at gastronomad.net. 1 month away, I think. I don't want to scare you from
it's something. It is terrifying. That's about it. And we're taking September, off in a couple of weeks to analyze the stuff.
Barcelona,
right?
So if you were watching Paul Thurrott's 2 weeks in Barcelona on Windows Weekly and thinking, why can't I be there? You can. Or is it sold out now?
You can't.
It's sold out.
It's sold out, yeah. All right.
And high five.
Big thanks to you, man. Leo.
High five.
We got some
fist bump.
We got some really solid people.
Manly
from
hug.
The Twit Army.
Yes. Do you really? You got some Twit listeners?
We did. Absolutely. Fun. And it's just, it's fantastic. We're really looking forward to it. And we have more coming in the Prosecco growing area of Italy. We have another
one in Provence.
In France. We don't know exactly when these are, but those pages are going up in a couple of days.
Go to gastronomad.net.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to see. I think this is better than the kind of travel I tend to do. It's not touring. You're going, you're going to stay in a place. You're going to experience the food and wine of that place.
That's right. You're going to cook.
You're going to have
We're going to make wine. We're going to learn how to make cheese. And then you eat it. So you learn how to make it, and then you eat what you made. And we also are going to see some real visionaries in the world of Barcelona.
The best baker in Barcelona, friends.
In Spain, we believe.
In Spain.
And so that's going to be really great. We're going to spend a lot of time learning how to make really good bread.
That sounds so awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll be streaming and posting.
Will you?
Yeah, I'm going to try really hard.
So we'll kind of get to live it vicariously.
Yeah.
Astronomad.
Excellent. But not the good stuff.
Well, we also hope we decided that we're going to do some in Sonoma as well sometime in the future. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
I can go to that.
Yeah.
That I can get to.
Exactly.
And you know what? Stacy, you should come out for it.
In fact, we're all going to be staying at your house, Leo.
Okay.
I was looking at the Mexico City one. But there's no dates yet, so I have no idea.
But we're going to do that.
Fez Morocco, Prosecco Italy, Southern France.
Yep.
Wow.
Sonoma.
I don't see Prosecco Italy.
It's not up yet.
Is that sold out?
Those pages are going up in a couple of days. But yeah, and if you, it's.
Because I got to say, next year I turn 40 and I'm looking for a great event for my best friend and I.
You got to do this.
And that's a great event.
Well, one of the things for the nerd audience, one of the things you can do, what we can do is we can give people an experience that they couldn't do on their own. So, for example, the house we're staying at in Barcelona has gigabit fiber internet connectivity.
Try finding that.
Anywhere in Barcelona.
We can do the shows from there.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
Yeah. So we try to do that at all the places where we stay. So it's
okay.
Nerd heaven.
Now my mind is
just blown.
Blown. So is your friend turning 40 also?
Mm-hmm. Our birthdays are like 12 days
apart.
Isn't
that awesome?
I've known her since I was 11.
Oh.
So.
That's so cute. So when I sat down, and Mike, you'll vouch for this, I sat down and I saw, there's somebody at my front door.
Yeah. Who was it?
I guess it's a delivery. Yeah. This is actually great. This is the Ring Video doorbell. It's a camera that is your doorbell. It's a camera, microphone, and speaker. If they ring the doorbell, it goes dun 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 on my phone, and I can pick it up and say, yeah, what do you want? Now, that's nice for security, because even if you're not home, anywhere in the world, you're on the internet, your doorbell's on the internet, so you could say, I'm not here, which is great, because burglars often will ring the doorbell first, wait to see if you're home, and then go around back and break in. This way, you're always home, even if you're not. You can also keep an eye on those packages. And since I get so many packages, this is a boon for me. I say, yeah, just leave it there. I'll be right out or whatever. And I don't miss packages, and I know that they're safe because I can keep an eye on them with the Ring doorbell. But now Ring's gone to the next level. We knew this would happen when they got that big investment from Richard Branson and his investor group. We knew that was just the beginning. Because Jamie Siminoff, the CEO, is really a creative, smart guy. They've added a couple of things. We've mentioned before their stick-up cam. Now they have, I love these, the floodlight cams. And this makes sense. You've probably already seen, certainly even had, floodlights that light up when you come down the side of your house or the back of your house. They light up. That's nice. That's a convenience. It has some security because, it turns on. Burglars know, though. People have automatic lights. But with the Ring floodlight cam, you also have the camera, the speaker, and the microphone. So you can hear them. You can talk to them. Say, yeah, can I help you?
I got to tell you, if you're a bad guy, you're walking behind a house and suddenly the light comes on and somebody says, can I help you? I think that's pretty much it. But if it isn't, if you get one of those persistent guys, there's a button on the interface you press that sets off a 110 decibel alarm and they go running, running. It's so much fun.
It's also great for you kids. Get off my lawn.
Yeah, get off my lawn. You know what? I use it to scare off the deer.
Yeah.
Because they're always eating our roses.
Yeah. And I have a whole section in the book. I'm doing a book on the gastronomad lifestyle, and it's on the Ring video doorbell. I recommend that everybody who travels bring
it. Oh, you can bring it with you.
Yeah, I use mounting putty, and I just put it there, and I have
it's so smart.
It's Yeah,
because the original has a battery in it that you charge.
Exactly.
So, and it lasts a year, so you can just charge
it. Lasts forever, yeah. And so this is great. Like, for example, when we were living in Mexico.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
It was fantastic, and there are a lot of people who come door-to-door in Mexico to sell things. Like, you get bottled water, they're hawking it, essentially.
Right.
And you don't know if they're like moonlighting as like, you know, maybe they're checking out if nobody's home, whatever, but you can never tell if somebody's not home because when they ring the bell and you answer, they assume probably that you're there. And in any event, you're getting video. But if you try, this is not just for your home, folks. This is fantastic.
That is a really smart idea. Bring it to your Airbnb.
Yeah, exactly.
They did this in Wilshire Park, a suburb of Los Angeles. If you go to ring.com and look at the neighborhood section, ring.com/twig and then click neighborhoods, they gave not everybody, but 10%, 1 in 10 homes, a Ring doorbell. In 6 months, burglaries down 55%. So now they have a whole program called the Ring Neighborhoods Beta. It's basically a digital neighborhood watch, and you
this
can be part of that.
Fascinating.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So I have a Ring on mine. Some of my neighbors have the Ring as well. So we, in effect, and you have to give permission, and they have to give permission, but I can see their doorbell.
Yeah.
So It is a neighborhood watch.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. Anyway, go to ring.com/twig. Get started with a Ring of Security Kit, the doorbell of your choice, and either 1, 2, or 3 Ring floodlight cams. You'll get up to $150 off. Find out more about Ring. Ring.com/twig, because we want to make sure that This Week in Google gets the credit. Ring.com/twig. We thank Ring for much of their support. What else? What else? There's so many things to talk about today. We did fortunately get all the phones. Should I set up Allo for the desktop?
I was just going to ask, like, who's
so
using
dopey.
Allo?
God damn it. I'm sorry.
What happens with Hangouts? Where?
So Google, which already has the most confusing messaging strategy anybody can imagine, now has made it worse. You'd think it's better because when I first read it, I went, oh, good, because one of the things missing from Allo, one of many, was the ability to use Allo on the desktop, right? That's a nice feature because I use that in Hangouts all the time.
Right.
I use it in Apple's Messages. If I have a Mac, if that's the problem, is you have to have a Mac available. But if you have a Mac available, or you do it on your iPad,
right,
if you get a message, you can respond. I don't like to type on my phone, so I actually will open up my iPad, or more likely my laptop, and respond there.
Yeah.
Same thing with Hangouts. So now Allo, apparently, so I got all excited. Oh, neat. So you probably shouldn't show that on the air, but that's okay if I quickly sign up for it. Otherwise, everybody's going to sign up for my Allo. So I'm going to, okay, go to Allo, allow, because what you're doing is you're connecting. Okay, now you can show it because, well, maybe not. Better not show it. This you can show. So what happens is now that fired up a web version of Allo. But the problem is it's getting all the chats from my phone. I have to be using an Android phone, Allo on an Android phone. Mm-hmm. There isn't really a presence on the web. You have to be using Chrome.
Yep.
And really all it is a Chrome-based interface to Allo. So now from now on, I can bookmark allo.google.com/web, and I have a web-based interface to Allo. But if my phone isn't on, if I turn my phone off, I think it won't work. I mean,
the iOS support is coming soon, they say. Right now, it's only Android. But, you know, the thing, so yes, it's super confusing, their whole messaging. Nobody understands it. Nobody.
They're close. If you let it work with Firefox, if you let it work on the iPhone, on a Macintosh, it doesn't. Wait a minute, I can't use Chrome on a Macintosh to do this.
You cannot, not right now. Oh well,
there is Allo for an iPhone.
Yeah,
no,
the phone
Chrome
has to be
on
an iPhone.
It works on Chrome.
I'm sorry,
anywhere. Oh, but it doesn't work with iPhones. You're
That's right. You have
it
to use the phone.
Only works with Android phones.
For now. And the, the iPhone support is coming.
Okay, so iPhones. So that's close. And then there's one more step. Let it do SMS messaging.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Yes.
Then it's a full service messenger.
Right. And we can all move to it. But and they haven't done that. But if that happens, and I hope it does, the thing that's potentially great about Allo is the assistant
built in.
But it's, I don't know if it still does this because I haven't used it in a while. But in the beginning, it was like, it would interject itself into your conversations. You'd be talking to somebody, chatting back
and
forth.
It would. So let's say I'm chatting with you, and we did this, I think. Yeah. Maybe it was Jeff. Yeah. I said, hey, let's go to, you want to go to a restaurant tonight? And then it says, well, here's some restaurants.
Yes.
And you can make a reservation.
Right. And it's fantastic. And I want that so badly. I want
Google in my messaging.
I want assistant
Google
listening to
my
conversations.
Business.
All up in
and
my business.
Suggesting things.
All up in it.
Really, that's the future of how computers will work. They'll be listening and helpfully suggesting things all the time.
Now, here's an interesting point. When you're on the web, I can't talk to the assistant. I have to type to the assistant.
Yeah.
That's not terrible. All it needs is SMS now.
Right.
Maybe. Right?
I just, converted everyone over to Hangouts.
I know. And Hangouts is only any good if you use Google Voice numbers or you're a Fi customer.
Right.
Because if you're not, then it doesn't do SMS.
Right. And I'm nervous. I would be nervous about Hangouts because I think at some point they're going to sort of cut off the people who are not using.
Well, and then they created Android Messenger.
Yeah.
Which they said, no, even if you're a Fi user, you really should be using Android Messenger. Oh, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Please, Google.
And people love Messenger. Insanity. Messenger is a really, really great app.
Messenger?
Messenger, yeah. Absolutely.
The Google Messenger?
Which
Google,
Messenger?
Google's. So Messenger is designed so that it can be the default app on your phone for messaging, right? When you get an Android phone, it can have Messenger as the way that you do SMS. And a lot of people love it.
Oh.
Oh, here's that's
a
what
nice
I use.
Thing. You can, what, Android Messenger?
Yes. Surprise!
Which Messenger? That Messenger. All right, so I just created a selfie. Let me just chat and send myself a selfie of me based on a picture of me. Does this look like me? I don't think so.
Not really.
So that's
a
new
feature.
Are you
holding cans up to your eyes?
It's binoculars, I think, or something, or glasses.
And then it says, for some reason, sorry, I can't handle that.
Yeah, I can't handle it either. That's...
Somebody in the chat room said, forget naming it Google Allo. They should call it Google Silo.
Good one, chat room.
Good one.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's Android Messages. But yes, that is a good app. It works.
Now.
Good show title, too.
Remember when we were talking about RCS?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's one reason they want you to use Messages, because it supports rich communication services.
But why can't Allo? There must
but
be some
why
reason.
Can't Allo? I give you that. And furthermore, we talked about it. This is the replacement for SMS. And the carriers, you would think, would be happy to replace SMS. Yeah. Their days of making any money on it are gone. They did make a lot of money on it. But most of the carriers and many manufacturers aren't going to do it. And if they don't do it, then what's... It's, again, Silo, not Allo.
Yeah.
Okay, so... We want Allo to support RCS. I would like it to support XMP. Remember G-Talk? Those were the days.
Right.
Oh, G-Talk.
Oh, G-Talk. I would like it to support every phone, every desktop, every browser.
Yes.
That's all.
Is that too much to ask?
That's all.
The world would not be so hard if we hadn't broken the internet.
Yeah.
But what's so we've never figured out. Maybe, Mike, you weren't here. We've debated this over and over again. Why isn't Google... doing the obvious? You and I and everybody else watching the show knows the right thing to do. Why aren't they doing it?
They have a bunch of weird, obscure reasons for it. And they just need to figure out how to just make it happen. Because
but
if
they can.
Did,
but if they not, did, it's not hard.
But if they did, everybody would use it. If they had one.
So there's a few possibilities. It's like Microsoft, where they have different fiefdoms battling and neither one has ascendancy.
No, no.
It's like Game of Thrones. They're all fighting for Westeros.
That's not what's happening.
Except Westeros is us.
It's all under what's his name?
Okay, so if it's not that, then are they worried about the carriers? Do they somehow need carrier buy-in? Are they afraid of being too aggressive and then making the carriers unhappy?
No, they launched fiber. That was a pretty. screw you carriers move.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Google Fi is also kind of a screw you carriers move.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I would even be happy if they said, well, if you have to have Fi. That'd be okay with me. Of course, I have Fi.
Yeah.
I was about to say.
But Fi, no, but Fi's very good. It only works on Google Pixel phones, but frankly, that's the only Android phones I really recommend. I mean, because of security.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's so frustrating.
If you're a Googler and you would like to explain to us why you have this broken strategy on messaging, I would love to hear it. Because if you don't fix it, Facebook or somebody's going to beat them, right?
Well, Facebook is just clobbering everybody on users. They've got WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, Messenger.
They're just as fragmented, aren't they?
No, but they have. But each of their platforms has a billion users. You know what I mean? It's like they have all the users. And Google has, so few users, and they could have so many.
I got a message in my, I got an email that was like, somebody messaged you on Facebook Messenger. And I'm like, screw that person.
I
hate that.
I get a lot of them. And the thing is, on an Android phone, you can use Facebook Messenger as your SMS app. So it does everything we've been asking Allo to do. It's got desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, kind of quasi-desktop. It's web-based. I don't think that's the right desktop.
Yeah.
I like WhatsApp. Well, no, that's web-based also. Apple's Messages is a standalone app, which I really like.
Right, and iMessage is, this is a lot of confusion around that, iMessage is the service that Apple supports.
Messages is the app.
Messages is the app. And so you can use one or the other. You can use it from the desktop. But what you can't do is if you do want to communicate with somebody on Android, you have to do it through SMS. And they, on the phone, they turn green, I think it is.
Yeah, the green is for Androids.
Right. Well, it's for SMS. It's for it's for not iMessage, and blue is for iMessage. So you know which way it's
going. You wrote an article in Computer World a couple of months ago, which just cracks me up. Google's myriad messaging apps, which are best for you? This is all of the messaging apps they have. Can you name these? Android Messages, Allo, Hangouts, Duo, Google Plus, Inbox, Spaces is gone.
It's gone.
So we could take that. Wait a minute. Let me annotate.
It went down after this.
Does Fi have its own messaging platform?
It has SMS.
Oh, yeah.
Through Google
Voice. We'll take that one up.
Yeah. Nice.
What's this one? I don't know. What?
Chat. Remember Chat? Like originally.
This is G-talk.
Gmail. That was another name for G-chat, G-talk. It had multiple names.
This, your phone app has messaging, text messaging.
Yeah.
And Gmail. I like this illustration.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And then, I think the biggest confusion is nobody knows what's going on. They're turning Hangouts into an enterprise thing.
Right.
They're changing it in ways that people don't really understand. Nobody knows what the roadmap is.
Right.
And so it's like, what do you use? You use WhatsApp. That's what you use.
This is a quote a Google spokesperson saying, we've designed specific products for distinct use cases, so we don't intend to have one app that does everything for everyone.
Yeah, which is a terrible
perspective. In an era of platforms and network effects, that is the dumbest thing I think I've heard.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, okay.
Okay, Google. Oh, don't say that.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, you guys.
You're going to piss off Allo.
My bad. Hey, I have a really random and weird question that I'm just going to throw out there.
Okay.
Why are all my icons on my phone? Why are all the little shortcut icons? Why are they all blue? The majority of my phone icons are blue. And I was just curious if there was a reason for that.
Oh, Facebook's blue, right? So maybe they did research that said blue is everybody's favorite.
But the Madam A app, Dropbox.
That's blue, yeah.
Wink, Nest, MyFitnessPal.
Maybe blue means IoT. Because I don't look at mine. My phone has a broad swath of lovely colors. Some blue.
You should ask your therapist.
Okay.
I'm sure it means something.
Why are my apps blue, therapist?
Why?
It's a call for help. She's feeling so blue.
No, I have a user interface issue because sometimes swipe up does that. Sometimes it does that. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a preponderance of blue. I would say blue is the most favoritist color.
Yeah.
The most favoritist.
Most favoritist color.
Mine, it's red.
Red, a lot of red.
And then green.
And then green.
Okay, I was just
red,
curious.
Red, green, and blue. That's pretty much it. And then shades thereof. Yellow. There's some yellows. Yeah.
I don't have very many yellows at all.
Samsung likes yellow. Snapchat's
Google
yellow.
Keep And you know me, or yellow.
You don't know me. You have an app called You Know Me?
You Know Me. It's a IoT app.
Oh,
Slides
you know,
is yellow.
U-N-O-M-I.
Y-O-N-O-M-I, yes.
Okay, I spelled it wrong.
That's okay.
YouTube is testing a very interesting new feature, which I think is brilliant. See, we giveth and we taketh away. YouTube testing a number on the video that you're watching that tells you how many other people are also watching this video.
You know, this brings up another topic, which is Facebook TV. And I got a glimpse of it the other day at my son's house. And they what they're saying is that they're bringing social networking into television, which is a brilliant idea.
Yep.
And which YouTube really needs to do. And this looks like it might be a start of that. But they show you all the chatter from everybody, not just from your friends. Like, who gives a rat's hiney?
Because you're in a larger community.
I'm not. I don't want anything to do with that community. If somebody I know comments on a TV show that I'm watching live, that's amazing. That's great.
And see, Facebook's the only one that can do that because generally speaking, they know your social graph. Generally speaking, when you're in a chat environment like that, you know, our chat room, they don't know who you know, don't they? Right. But Facebook does.
Think of the Oscars or think of major news events where your friends, actual friends that you know, you're all chatting on the screen that you're all watching. That's why doesn't somebody do that?
Wouldn't cool?
Yes, that would be amazing.
You know why they don't do it? Because unlike you, most of us don't have any friends. It would be really slow in there. That's why. There'd be one comment every hour. But it's something like Game of Thrones. What if we could all...
Yeah.
So to this point, Facebook's investing how much money? A lot of money.
A lot of money.
Into original programming.
Right.
Apple just announced they're going to spend $1 billion, which I thought sounded like a lot.
Yeah.
And then it said that's about 10 shows... And that HBO spends twice that.
Yeah.
And that Netflix spends 10 times that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, $6 billion, six times that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
TV production's expensive.
Yeah.
So Leo's like, oh, I'm doing something wrong.
I am. I should be spending billions on this.
Billions.
Billions. Why aren't I spending billions? So $1 billion, Apple has demonstrated a complete inability to create content anybody wants to watch with the Planet of the Apps.
Oh, my goodness.
Has anybody watched Carpool Karaoke?
Yes, it's terrible. They've ruined it.
How could you ruin such an easy... It's easy.
I'll tell you how they ruined it. They made it super slick and professional.
Yeah.
It used to be this casual, like, you know, camera in the car.
Well, it was a bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't the whole show.
Yeah. Exactly. But there's product placement in it, and it's just horrible.
And in the old show, they had James Corden singing and hosting.
Yeah.
Now there's no. It looks like at least in the tease, there's no host.
He does some of them, and then sometimes he doesn't, and that doesn't work either.
But for the most part, it looks like just the karaokeers.
Right. It's the two. It's
just riding along.
Right. It's the two
singing in the car.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, or it's like, you know, it's thematic. In terms of who's in the car.
Here, let's see here.
It's just awful.
And this is from Apple.
And they have super high production values, and that oddly ruins it.
Nothing you
There's Corden in the back. John Legend's driving. Alicia Keys is in the shotgun.
Let me give you some things to sing, because I think you can make any statement.
This is more like the original.
All right, John, you first.
Okay. Do you need a lift, bro? Do you need a lift, bro?
Hey.
Okay, I'm done.
Do you need a lift, bro?
Yeah, so
I'm done.
What you notice when you watch it is that it feels more scripted, more produced.
And simultaneously less fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be this show. It's got to be just like...
Apple has demonstrated an inability to create good content. They have hired two people from Hollywood. Eddie Q is apparently at Apple determined to make this. And if you think about it, there is an upside because right now you have to be an Apple Music subscriber, I think.
You do.
So they could make some money. I mean, this is like a HBO. This is
a profit deal.
Yeah. Profit. But you have to make content people want to watch. Will throwing $1 billion at it change that?
I don't think so.
Paul, did you see that Paul Theriot wrote about hands-free calling coming to Google Home?
No.
Oh, okay. He did it today.
He didn't mention it to me, and I was just talking to him.
Well, that's why I was wondering if you'll try it.
Oh, it's
I don't have
it's rolling
it
out
yet.
Today.
It's rolling out this week. So mine doesn't have it. So I was like, oh, wait, I have to
know how this works. Do we have a home here? I should have a home here. Somebody bring me a home. We have a home.
Oh, Jeff has a home.
So the idea, I know. The idea was, this was announced at Google I.O. some months ago.
Yeah.
That you, and I thought this was a killer feature, although the rest of
you. Because it works with phones, right?
The rest of you kind of laughed at me, but I thought this is disruptive. You can call any phone from your Google Home.
Yeah.
Free. U.S. and Canada. And I just thought that was kind of disruptive. Like,
yeah,
everybody
so
can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But, okay, so that's rolling out. So anybody home? Yes, as the geek says, fetch me a home. You can see how well that worked.
Yeah. I don't see
everybody's scrambling. Yeah. Oh, wait. Do we not have a home?
Somebody came in empty-handed.
I have several at home.
Yeah, and okay. Mine doesn't have it. I checked.
I think everybody brought them home. Okay. Would somebody in the chat room, would you try it? Call Leo. I'm also curious, what is the caller ID? They said it would be your number. What did they say? I think they said it would be your number. The call recipient will see either unknown or no caller ID. Google says it will display your mobile number by the end of the year instead. Your mobile.
Ooh.
And if you're a Google Fi or Google Voice user, you can have it display that number now. So I can have it display my Google Voice or Fi number, which is the same. So I gave out my number, and I realized this show will be downloaded and listened to by roughly 100,000 people over the next
And they'll all
days.
Be calling you over the next week.
I've just made my phone completely unusable.
Huge mistake.
I thought, well, it'll only be unusable for a couple of hours.
You need cloud flare.
I need cloud flare for the phone. Huh?
We'll bleep it.
No, you don't have to bleep it.
We're going to bleep it.
Oh, they're going to bleep it. So only those of you listening live.
Lisa and the voice of reason right there. Yeah.
Oh, we're bleeping it. Too bad I'm making it the title of the show.
Routing around the censorship.
Running around the censorship. So it turns out Papa John's has tried something that's been a massive success, ordering pizza on Facebook. TGI Fridays started this, letting you pay with your Amazon account. And Papa John's has now declared itself an e-commerce company after delivering surprisingly strong results.
Wow.
So this is a graphic from Bloomberg, which I just like the name of it. Online and hungry. Internet users who have ordered food delivery in the past year, 69.4%. Well, I have. Have you, Stacey?
Yeah.
You live in Austin.
I order from like Uber Eats or from Amazon
counts.
Restaurants.
That counts.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
I do that like weekly, daily.
You do it, Mike, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you do it in Europe?
Yeah, you can. Yep.
We have a lot of infrastructure here. There's Grubhub and Foodler. Yeah. And there's dozens of companies.
They have, that's you can do that stuff all over Europe.
Okay.
But this makes sense. I mean, like, think about how enmeshed people get into Facebook and, oh my God, if you're hungry and you leave Facebook and turn it off, then your eyeballs are not being monetized. But if you order pizza, not only do you not leave Facebook, but Facebook's like, see, we're a legit platform that, you should pay us to be on.
I guess it's actually in the ad. You see an ad for a pizza. This is very dangerous for
me.
You see an ad for a pizza and you go, and you click it and you can order it right there. The company began accepting orders on Facebook in June. The feature was an instant hit. Hundreds of orders flowed into the first few hours. Digital orders now make up 60% of Papa John's sales. Completely in a few months transforming their business into, an e-commerce business.
Amazing.
Pizza is a good one because pizza is a real impulse buy. Right?
It's the digital version of having something at the cash register and you're standing there and you're like, well, I'll take it because it's hanging there at the cash register. I might as well buy it.
McDonald's has a McDelivery program using Uber Eats.
Yeah, this is all going to make us so much healthier.
Denny's started one. I just saw an ad for Denny's ordering online, but I don't think it's in Facebook.
But if I order before 4:30, can I get the early bird specials?
I just think breakfast is not a great meal to deliver. Like a cold omelet, like awful.
Actually, it's interesting. I read a review of a new restaurant in New York City that is created by some very high-end restaurateurs and chefs. And they have 10 dishes, but they're all designed to be deliverable. You can go and get it and eat it. But they've designed the meals in such a way that they should hold up in a cardboard container for half an hour.
That's why Chinese food is such a great delivery food, because it delivers so well.
And it reheats if you need to.
Oh, no, except for the fried stuff. The fried stuff, steam from the fridge, then it gets
no crispy.
But chop suey does pretty well.
Yeah, any of the
wet noodles, stuff. Other stuff, wet stuff. Yum.
Any of the wet food tastes great. Well, yeah, I think it's interesting that there you can now have impulse buying for food.
And I think this usage is going to be huge on the Google Home and the Amazon Echoes of the world, because that's really how it should be. I should be able to just say for all the pizza places, just say, you know, I need a pizza. Where do you want it from? Oh, I want it from this restaurant. Okay. Do you want the usual? Yes, I want the usual.
Well, Domino's has a skill. So you can do that with Domino's on your Echo and maybe
it's
your
crappy
home.
Pizza.
Yeah. And the skills approach is a crappy approach.
Well, you have to remember a lot of Domino's pizza.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, there's thousands of them, but it's like you have to remember. It's almost like the command line world. You couldn't use a DOS computer unless you memorized all the commands.
That's really, right. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and that's the problem with it. The AI should pick the skill.
It will in time.
It will.
It will in time. That's going to happen. Now, I will say, I don't consistently order any one thing from a place. So right now, the logistics of getting a menu and doing, there are very few places where I have a quote unquote usual.
Yeah.
So that's.
Don't lie.
That's hard to do.
Don't lie. They have the Stacey Higginbotham sandwich.
But it'll change.
Oh, my God. I've always wanted a sandwich named after me. And
Higginbotham.
I was thinking the Stacey. But, you know, I would also accept the Higginbotham. But
there should
I
be an open-faced sandwich called the Higginbottom.
I went to Salt Lick and I ordered a Higginbotham. I'll have a side of Higginbothams and two Stacey's. Like it.
But I think it'll change behavior, though, Stacey, because I think what'll happen is they'll be like, surprise me. It'll be like Blue Apron or something like that, where trust us, we'll send you like something you'll love. And people would actually say, okay, yeah, that sounds great. Send it to me.
That sounds crazy.
Well, that's how the Blue Aprons work. And it's fantastic.
No, I know. But
isn't it funny because we thought, remember interactive TV?
Yeah.
Do you remember the cable companies wanted to do that? That was the early convergence, right? Interactive TV. There were all these trials. There was a big trial in Florida where they put interactive TV, and all people ordered was stamps.
Yeah.
That was the big product, was stamps. But they just somehow got it wrong, because we order food online all the time.
Yeah. Yep.
What's the difference?
In blue.
I don't even remember how
it
worked.
Having to use a remote control.
I mean,
is painful.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
In fact, in years to come, we'll say having to type it in on a website is painful. I know it is. I go to, we have a Petaluma food taxi, and you have to go through the menu. It just takes a while. Yeah. Because we'll say that's painful, because what we'll really just do is say, hey, Echo, I'm kind of in the mood for, I don't know, do you have any salads, maybe some salmon and croutons?
Yeah, or I want something spicy.
And that's all it will need.
And walk you through it and lead you to something. But the difference, I think, nowadays is that it's not a new behavior, actually, to order something on the internet. We're doing it with all these other products.
Right. We're used to it.
Yeah, and we know how to do it. We feel good about our credit card and all that stuff. So might as well throw food in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Bill Gates makes another massive donation. Wow.
He's running out of Apple's, out of Microsoft stock.
Actually, he's not. He's still the richest man in the world. That's what's amazing.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing. Although Jeff Bezos is now closer.
Yeah. Well, he was the richest for a couple of hours.
For a minute, yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I used to be the richest man in the world, he says, for a minute. Then my stock went back down. Bill Gates is going to give $5 billion. He gives it to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
But it's not his first gift. I mean, they started the foundation with an even bigger gift, $16 billion. $5 billion, that was in 99. In 2000, $5.1 billion. This is now an additional gift of $5 billion. It's the largest gift of 2017, although Warren Buffett gave more than $3 billion away this year. So did Michael Dell, gave away $1 billion. That's kind of, you got to praise the guy. They've given away, Bill and Melinda have given away $35 billion in stock and cash since 94. And he's still, $35 billion, and he's still the richest man in the world.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
This is the magic of compound interest,
yes.
As Warren Buffett
right.
will say.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you can't give it away fast enough.
Yeah. And
that's,
for
that's
Warren Buffett
to
say,
have.
I know.
I want to give my money away. I think I'll give it to the richest guy in the world. That's who's getting my money.
Me.
But I've said this about Zuckerberg. I tend to not think that this kind of philanthropy is as noble as it appears. And that's going to sound like a horrible
thing
to say.
Certainly with some Mark, it was a little weird because his wasn't exactly a direct gift.
But some
of
the
Bill
stuff.
I think Bill Gates' philanthropy
I think his is genuine.
It's genuine, it's but genuine. The problem with it is that after the first billion, it's all you can. There's nothing more that you can buy materially,
right?
So what you can buy is power, and this kind of philanthropy gives him power. He gets to decide.
Big deal.
No, it is a big deal. He gets to decide that Africa is going to go to GMO. Like that's not something that Africans are going to decide. Bill Gates is going to decide because he happens to personally like GMO
money.
Crops.
Yeah.
And you know he
does. It's not
decide
just personal. It is also research. But
okay.
I see your point. His worldview is dictating
most
politics.
Of what he does. I support completely, but the point I'm trying to make is that there are all these contested issues out there, and what billionaires like Bill Gates and Zuckerberg are doing there is saying, you know what, I've bought everything I can possibly buy, and now I'm going to influence the world and make the world match up with my own personal beliefs, and I'm going to crush other people's. Initiatives with my money.
I think that's way too much. If you look at the stuff he's doing, he's got small grants for things like bringing waste management to Africa and places that don't have utilities, his malaria efforts. Those are in all of this is backed by everybody's favorite data. And his foundation does a really good job communicating with people in researching things. It is not like a typical, like Zuckerberg's donation to the schools of New Jersey. That felt like education sucks.
And it was a mess.
And I agree with you. And this is why, this is actually precisely why Warren Buffett wants Bill Gates to do his philanthropy, because of that process you're talking about of the vetting is very intense for any
Bill
sort
Gates
of-
always
said- He has power, but you're always going to have people who get to make decisions. You can't have total consensus. There's always going to be compromises, and it's just a folly. It's kind of, I don't know.
Let me give you an example.
Before you say, I kind of understand what you're saying, though, Mike, because there are two ways Gates could give away his money or anybody give away the money. One is they could give it to an organization and let the organization decide how to distribute it.
Mm-hmm. He does that too, though.
And if he does, that's fine. That's giving up the power and saying, I'm merely going to give you the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can hold on to it in your own personal foundation, as both he and Zuck do. Well, Buffett does not. Buffett gives Gates his money, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So Buffett's clearly not trying to influence the world, unless he and Gates are so aligned in worldview that he says, well, I want you to do because we agree. But Gates is and Zuck both are saying, no, we're going to keep the money. We're going to distribute it as we with our advisors and with our research see fit. But your point is well taken that he is still the guy who's deciding what to do with it. I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, and obviously nobody who's receiving his charity does.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an interesting point. It's a very powerful position.
This is a tricky thing, especially in the third world. So let me just give you a stark example from the past. So, for example, there are certain parts of northern Africa that have occasional droughts, and it's catastrophic for the population. Kenya, for example, will have droughts occasionally, or did in the past, where there's lots of starvation. Some farmers in Kenya actually figured out on their own how to farm in a way that survived the drought. But when you give like massive bags of grain, I'm not saying this is what the Gates Foundation did. This is just an example. Essentially, and give it away free to Kenyans, what you're doing is you're running the guy who succeeded out of business, and you're giving a foreign solution that what you should be doing is rewarding the guy, the farmers who figured it out. And having those ideas spread locally and have it be a local solution. And so in Africa is a particular problem because, you know, Western organizations always swoop in and we're like, we'll save you. And it's like we should be doing a lot more listening to them. The farmers in Kenya are really know what they're – a lot of them really know what
I should also point out that the amount of money, even if you combine Buffett, Gates, and Zuckerberg, the amount of money they're giving away is dwarfed by governmental foreign aid. And that is exactly why governments do foreign aid. The number one recipient, I think it's changed now, but for years, the number one recipient of foreign aid from the U.S. was Egypt.
Yeah. And that's from the
peace
accords.
Why? Because they were trying to get peace in the Middle East.
Right.
Anwar Sadat helped.
And in other countries, they're essentially buying off the leader to get get them to play ball in other arenas.
And there's also economic reasons they want to benefit U.S. corporations. So America, at least, has always used its trillions, not billions, in an effort to exert its will over the rest of the world. So why wouldn't Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg do that? Nick Bilton has a really good article in the Vanity Fair about Zuckerberg's ambitions for presidency. He says we've talked about this before. He says Mark's political ambitions are grander than you think. He doesn't think. He says he may run for higher office someday. I'm convinced he's running in 2020.
Yep.
But Bilton, who knows Mark a lot better than I do, says he's preparing for the job, but he has other interests. And one of them is he got terrified after the 2016 presidential election when he realized that how much Facebook influenced that election.
Yep.
And it scared him. And he's desperately trying to find a way, a better way, a way out. That doesn't mean him becoming president, but it does involve him getting kind of involved in what's going on.
Right.
And that's why he's talking to people in every state, not because he's running for president. I think Nick is a smart guy. He probably knows better than I do what Zuckerberg's ambitions are. I still feel like he might want to run for president, but...
I mean,
Natasha, I can't ever say her. She's over at Wired. Let me find it. Wired. Google Wired Zuck president and see if the article comes up.
There's real debate now because he keeps making these moves like hiring presidential advisors.
And he takes pictures of himself on tractors and stuff
that. Is this the one Mark Zuckerberg is sure? No, this is an older one.
No, it's why people can't stop talking about Zuckerberg 2020. Natasha Tiku. And she makes the point that running for president is so polarizing that as long as Facebook is Zuckerberg is associated with
business.
Facebook,
mm-hmm.
it would be,
bad for business. Yet,
so,
like it or not, Facebook is in the game.
Well, here's
aren't they?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I think this tour is kind of a big deal.
It has to be pointed out also that Zuckerberg's idol is Bill Gates.
Oh, interesting.
I think that, he looks at what Bill Gates did, which was that he shifted into philanthropy mode suddenly at the peak of his career, basically, and made the huge mistake of handing the whole thing over to Steve Ballmer. But I think Zuck probably, wants to leave Facebook when he's 40 or something,
Actually, I should point out that Ballmer increased the stock value of Microsoft by several times. And thereby increasing Bill Gates' wealth. So it wasn't such a mistake.
Yeah. There are other metrics that show that, the
loss. They could have done better.
Yeah, they could have done. They should have done much better. But anyway, the point, I think Zuckerberg doesn't want to do this forever. And I think that at some point, he certainly would do this. He wants to just get out, get on a spending thing where he's extracting stock. He's got a lot more Facebook stock than Gates ever had of Microsoft stock, I think, and do something. So what's he going to do?
He has a lot more control.
Run for president, do this, do that, the other thing, and he won't be part of Facebook.
To go back to our previous conversation, and by the way, one of the things they changed the bylaws of Facebook says that he could take a leave of absence to work in government and wouldn't lose his voting shares.
Yeah.
So clearly they're thinking about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
If you're right in saying that they want to exert their power by charitable contributions, again, think how much more a government can exert its power with foreign aid.
Yeah.
So that's the next step. I don't think it's out of the – it's a fun one to talk about, and we'll know in a few years. I think the landscape, political landscape, is going to shift dramatically over the next 3 years in very unpredictable ways.
Yes.
I think we can all agree on that.
But how controversial would it be if Zuck actually ran for president? Because nobody knows what other Facebook users see on their newsfeed. They can control those algorithms to say and do anything they want. And this is one of the scary things about the Trump election, which is that they were using this, Jared Kushner was using this company that served micro ads, and it was all invisible under the radar because each individual was seeing an ad and then it was gone. And who knows what was actually happening? Zuck could easily do that. He doesn't even have to run. Tweak the algorithms and he would be elected. Facebook really does have that much power.
That's what I'm saying.
And but so he, that's why I don't think he can run, because that would be so outrageous.
Yeah, and America is so good at outrage. Oh, yeah. We wouldn't accept a billionaire becoming president.
Well, yeah, of course not. That would be ridiculous.
Let's nip that in the bud right now. Okay. I think, like I said, I think we have entered terra incognita for the last few months, and I think it's getting weirder by the minute.
By the minute.
And who knows what 2020 is going to look like, or even if there'll even be an election in 2020.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Well, the good news in all this is that Trump is grossly incompetent.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
And so I don't think
become apparent.
His approval rating is very low, and it'll probably stay that way.
You know who's worse than Trump's?
Zuckerberg?
Macron in France.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know what? I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore. I do know this. The DOJ has got to be stopped. They've just demanded information about every visitor to a website. DreamHost, which hosts the website, is fighting this request. The website, which was a Trump protest website, which organized the protest. Oh, stop the auto. Stop with the autoplay. Which organized the inauguration day protest. The warrant, July 12th, says authorities will seize any information constituting violations of D.C. code governing riots that involve individuals connected to the protest on inauguration day. But what they're asking for is this massive data dump of every single person who visited the website, whether you were in D.C. or not that day, including names, addresses, telephone numbers and other identifiers, email addresses, business information, the length of service, means and source of payment for services, and information about any domain name registration about this website. They want they want the logs.
This request is straight up Banana Republic stuff.
Well, you protest against the president, and the Department of Justice comes and says, we want the name of every single person who visited this website.
Yeah. This is Chinese Communist Party behavior.
Now, DreamHost is going to fight. By the way, DreamHost has complied with search warrants and legal processes. But at this point, the site is called disruptj20.org. DreamHost says, we are going to fight this. Whether they'll win, I don't know. Whether the DOJ will back down, I don't know. I'm glad that there's attention. We want to increase that attention because, of course, this kind of thing succeeds in secrecy generally.
Well, interestingly, the quasi pseudo precedent for this was that they, as under the guise of cracking down on election fraud or investigating election fraud from the last election, they sent a demand to the states.
Every voter record.
And most of the states said no.
Thank goodness. I think all but one.
Yeah. And so that was a good precedent. And I think that DreamHost has got to say no. If they don't, that's really, really bad.
Yeah. Well, we'll follow this. We'll keep an eye on it. But that's scary. You should not. They should not be able to get your name because you visited a website. I'm sorry. Right. Even if it's the Daily Stormer. I don't think that's acceptable at all.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we're getting towards anything I've missed here. IKEA is going to do smart light bulbs.
Oh, guys, I got my Trodfi lights. They've already been doing them.
What do they call them?
Trodfi. they're downstairs.
What
but
does that mean in Norwegian or Swedish?
Yeah,
what
I don't
is
think it
Swedish?
Means anything.
Sweden.
Swedish.
Yeah, Swedish.
They have those great names. All their stuff has great names.
We just bought a Malm bed for my daughter.
Oh, I had a Malm bed for my daughter. Love the Malm bed. Yeah.
So they're,
I did not assemble
so
it myself.
we assembled it. It wasn't that bad.
Really? Oh, good.
Yeah, it was doable.
I had my brother-in-law do it.
Oh, there you go. Next week, if I I'll have tested it by next week. So, yeah.
I guess what's new is that they work with HomeKit.
It's not. I don't think it's there yet. That everyone reported it like last week that they were HomeKit enabled, but they aren't. Yet, I don't believe.
You can use them with a Echo, though. No? They said they're getting HomeKit. Echo and Google Home support. So all three's coming. Okay.
I tell you what. I'll tell you next week what works and what doesn't.
Good. Can you do it in Swedish? Or at least with a Swedish accent?
I could do it with the Swedish meatball next to me.
These meatballs are good, especially with a little lingonberry jelly on the side.
Actually, I made a prediction, I think, a year or two ago, and I'm sticking by it, even though there's no hint that it's coming true yet. But I think that eventually light bulbs are going to be the location for speakers and microphones for the Google Homes of the world. And
right, because they're ubiquitous. Oh, they have power.
They already exist.
And they're always in places where people are. You know,
well, they have
always,
audio light bulbs. I've seen speaker light bulbs.
They have tons. I have light bulbs with sensors in them. They put lux sensors, so light sensors in them. They've put temperature sensors in them. They put speakers.
Temperature sensors, like, isn't it always hot?
LEDs are not as hot. I guess they're away from the LED heat sink. I don't know why they're all doing, but that's already been happening. You're right in your prediction, because it's been happening for a really long time.
I mean, I would love to see Google, for example, come out with
a home,
Google Home light bulbs.
That goes in the light bulb.
No. Yes. Don't get Google into light bulbs, because Google should just grab the data from somebody else's light bulb, someone who actually makes light bulbs.
Because you only have so many sockets. At some point,
I'm out of sockets. I have to unscrew things all the time.
You don't want the Pixel light bulb?
I do not. I just got a HomeKit light bulb that doesn't require a hub, which is really exciting. It's the Sylvania one that's going to ship in September. So I can try that. We can do a little light bulb show next week. I'll have lamps. Y'all can compare.
What do you think of this? Liftoff, which is a mobile app marketing firm, did a study, data gathered between June and 2016 and June 2017. They said that apps that have a subscription fee do better if they charge more.
Yeah.
Apps in the medium price range had the highest conversion rate. The lowest cost to acquire a subscriber at just over $106. That's five times higher than the rate of people with 99-cent apps. What? Why?
Because people have no ability to understand what the value of something is.
Okay.
But if you put a price on it, that's the value. And if it's
more
99 cents, then
it's
a worthless piece of junk. And if it's $20, then this must be really good.
But $50 is too much. Like, there's a bridge too far.
Yeah.
So for an app?
And this is sunk cost fallacy.
For a monthly or yearly subscription. It's a month per month.
Yeah, yeah.
That's $7 to $20 is the right.
Yep.
It's the sunk cost fallacy.
The sunk cost fallacy is that, if I understand it correctly, it's where you you pay for something and then you use it because you paid for it. I think, and then because you're using it, you keep paying for it. So if you don't have to pay for anything, it's easy in, easy out. Easy come, easy go.
You have no commitment.
Exactly. But if you paid for it, you're like, okay, I'm a user of this thing and I'm going to keep doing it. And I've already invested all this money and I'm going to keep using it. And therefore, I'm going to keep paying for it.
Mm.
I think that's what it means.
The sunk cost fallacy is...
Oh, she's looking up. She's a reporter. You got to watch out for her. You can't...
I'm sorry.
This has been a very difficult show for me to do, because I am famous for asserting bogus things. And then Stacy will look it up.
The sunk cost fallacy is you make rational decisions based on the future value of objects, investments, and experience.
Okay,
Now, you did describe a sunk cost correctly, but the idea is that you're a rational actor when you're making financial decisions. But really what happens is pricing changes things.
Right.
Pricing can influence you, like anchor pricing and that sort of thing.
Who's that behavioral economist who wrote this?
Yeah, you know,
the TED Talk guy.
Yeah,
yeah. Everybody loves that guy. Nobody can remember.
Love
his
that
name.
Guy. Oh, I'm just old. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah. He's got a funny name.
Yeah.
Freakonomics guy? No,
no, no.
It's
he's
the other
not
guy.
A Freakonomics guy. He has been on their podcast, but
yeah, no, he's the other guy. While we're thinking of that, let us wrap things up, because I got to go to Disneyland, with your picks of the week. I'll start. Well, you can look up and Stacy can begin here.
You want my pick
irrationally of the week? Predictable.
That's the guy.
Predictably irrational.
Yeah.
And his name.
This week in Google. This is no place to be using Google.
I can think this stuff. This stuff comes to me, but my brain, I think it's like slower as you get older, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's in there.
Dan Ariely.
Dan Ariely.
Yeah. Ariely, yeah.
Oh, he wrote about traffic too.
That yeah, he's great. Yeah. I think I've interviewed him. Have I interviewed him on Triangulation?
Yeah, you have.
Okay. Yep. Sorry, Dan.
he does experiments on trick-or-treaters and he offers them different. If you can have these two candy bars, you can have these
actually,
three.
Actually, that should be our pick of the week. If you haven't read Predictably Irrational or Irrationally Predictable, Predictably Irrational. It is a great
Predictably
book.
Irrational.
Dan, A-R-I-E-L-Y. And his stuff is really great.
And check out his TED Talks.
He passed away? No. You're talking about John Maynard Keynes. He says John Maynard Keynes. Yeah, he passed away. Pick of the week, Stacey Higginbotham. Besides the roller coaster, yes.
Instead of a gadget, I have a brand new cookbook.
Ooh, new way to dinner.
What's exciting about this is I've been wanting to cook like one day a week. So like plan out my meals for the whole week and then cook all in one day and save them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes.
So that's what this book is about. So I'm going to open it so you can see. So
it's the Marie Kondo
you,
of cookbooks.
Sure. I'm going to just go with, that sounds great. So this page, you get a page that says like, here's your
dinners. Amanda Hesser. I love her.
Yeah.
She's one of my favorite. Yeah. She was at New York Times. She is really, really a good, I have her other cookbook. I love Amanda Hesser. Okay.
So what it does is it gives you, I'm in the wrong section for my camera. It gives you like a game plan that says on the day that you're cooking.
Oh, I gotta get this. Oh, man.
So now.
So like you cook a roast chicken on Monday and have shredded chicken on a Tuesday.
Well, not exactly. Oh. So we did a week. I bought this last week. So, you know. There's some good things and bad things about this. So there's five dinners in like, and she's got two dinners. She and her there's four dinners per season or 4 weeks of cooking per season, basically. And there's like five dinners in each one plus some lunches. And they kind of, the game plan is they tell you you're going to cook for like 2 or 3 or even 4 hours on a day. And they give you all the instructions for the cooking and they give you the grocery list and then you start assembling things and it should take about 10 to 15 minutes. Like last night we assembled one that I had pre-made the tomato compote kind of thing. It's not a compote. I roasted some tomatoes, like 2 cups of tomatoes basically. Actually, no, it was 12 cups of tomatoes.
Holy camole.
I know. So the one thing is when you're cooking
you cook
this
more
stuff, because you're cooking for a week, you're cooking a ton.
Right.
So
that's why they sell all these like jars and bond things to on the website.
Yes. We had a hard time like putting, like I was definitely running out of Tupperware containers for everything.
You know
so
what
I cook
I've
like pounds of meat.
I'm going to buy these tiffins. These are in India, this is your lunchbox.
Oh, yeah.
I always wanted these. Look at that.
Yeah, okay. Those are cool.
Yeah.
So
I want a three-tier tiffin. That's what I want. Oh, look at that.
Can you get one with wheels on it? A big one?
You'd need it on this one. Okay, sorry. I got distracted at food52.com. Go ahead.
Okay. So the timing.
By the way, this is bearing out the Google memo because you're interested in the food and the recipes. I'm interested in the gadgets that go along with it. Go ahead.
Okay. No, you're interrupting me.
I am.
That's how
I'm
it bears
sorry.
Into the hood.
I'm
sorry. Like,
go ahead.
I'm like, there we go.
Go ahead.
It's okay. I mean, if it's not interesting, I don't have to go.
No, please. I'm fascinated.
But I'm like, I'm trying to review this cookbook here. The time it gives you for cooking is like a little off. So you're going to probably spend more time in the kitchen. You might also, like, it makes enough for 4 people in these recipes. You get a lot of food. Yeah. We have 3 people in our house. And I think
so
kind of like Blue Apron, how there's so much food.
Yeah.
But it's really nice not to have to think about dinner. So I don't know if I would do this every week, but there are definitely some weeks that I'm like,
I'm going to try.
Yeah. So, and there's sites on this online that, you know, but I kind of like cooking from a cookbook because I'm old school that way. So
they also have a podcast. Did you know that?
The Food 52 podcast?
It's called Burnt Toast.
Yes.
Yeah. So I haven't listened to that.
You can listen to that podcast while you cook. Because you're going to be in the kitchen a really long time. This is a great time to catch up on all your podcasts, actually.
If you don't, you're going to be really hungry. Okay, good. This is good. I like. I'm ordering the book right now. Thank you. Good recommendation. I think Michael is also a good recommendation.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I can I go?
Yes, go.
All right. I have a quick question for you, Stacey, which is that you have a June oven, right?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't they just come out with a new
have a
June
new
oven?
One. I'm so
how
mad.
You,
it's the
how
June,
do you feel about that?
The June Pro.
It's a built-in though.
Right.
It's not like so like was I was not going to take out one of my existing ovens to put the June in. If I were building a house and I had bought a June, I'd be sad, but that's a pretty small people.
It costs a little more too. It's $2,000.
It costs $2,000. But it's a wall unit.
It's an oven.
And so it's
Is it bigger than the June?
It is the same size, I believe.
Oh, interesting. I think that's this is actually a good idea because the June really is your second oven.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean I use my June oven almost not every night, not this week because I pre-made everything, but I mean, we use our June oven almost every day.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, we even use it to toast our Eggo waffles and they taste better.
They do taste better. Everything tastes better.
I'm like, how does that even happen? So.
All right. So
that is that.
Okay. So my tool of the week is something called Meeting Bird. I don't know if you've ever talked about this
no,
on the show.
I don't know about
Meeting Bird is a Chrome plugin that unites and integrates Google Calendar with both Gmail and Inbox.
Oh, I need it.
Yes, you do. It's fantastic. Basically, what it one of the things it does is it puts a bit of calendar on the side of your email package. And when you open up an email where you're discussing a meeting, it auto-populates the calendar on the date with the information and the name and the person's phone number and all that stuff. And it just says, do you want to schedule this? You click one button and it's scheduled on your calendar. You can toggle between your calendars.
This is great.
You can toggle between time zones. You can set up teams. So you say, here's my team. Here's the marketing team. And you can have all the people in there. And it knows what time zones they're in. It knows what they're, you know, what's going on with them. It's really fantastic. But the best thing of all is the contextual jumping. It like, if there's any mention of a date in an email, the calendar part of it says, do you want to go to this date? You click the button and you're on that date, looking at that date. So it's very, very easy to use Google Calendar from email. And really, Google should just buy these guys and integrate this functionality because it's just brilliant. And
Does it cost anything?
I don't think so. I know there's a free tier, but
I'm signing up right now.
Yeah, but it's in addition to the integration, it also you go to Meeting Bird instead of Google Calendar, and it shows you your Google Calendar within Meeting Bird, and it's a better interface. It's more pleasant. It's more functional. It has all kinds of cool features. It's more AI-ish, you know, it's like figuring things out for you. It's just if you use either one of Google's email packages and Google Calendar, you will absolutely love Meeting Bird. It's really, really a good addition.
Sign up today.
I saw a story somewhere that Google was updating Google Calendar.
Yeah,
is
they
that true?
Supposedly updated. I haven't seen it reflected yet.
Any changes? How update? How what?
I think they redesigned it. I'm not sure if they did it on the... I should know this. Let me see here.
So my pick of the week is something that I am not going to do, but I want you to do it so you could tell me if it makes any sense. I heard about this. It was weird. I heard about this on yesterday on TNT, and I thought, what are they talking about? And then I saw more. It's called MoviePass. $10 a month. Actually, $9.95 a month. And you can see as many movies you want, up to one a day, for 30 days.
You can't see 3D, which is fine.
I don't care.
I don't like
you
the
have
3D
to
movies.
Have a debit card.
Right.
You buy the tickets, and then you get reimbursed, right? Or it gets reversed. The charge gets reversed or something.
I think it's brilliant.
It's
Didn't they threaten to sue them? AMC threatened to sue them.
Well, don't use them at AMC then.
Sorry. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, AMC has filed a lawsuit. I don't know how they can because from the movie theater's point of view, it doesn't look any different. You're still going in there, right?
Yep.
And buying the movie. And they get the full money, right? MoviePass refunds you the cost. I think the theory, I don't understand it at all. The theory is the gym membership, most people won't use it. But if you go to one movie a month, it will pay for itself.
But, the, you know, I think that it's like if you go to the movie, if you've been to the movie theaters recently, unless you're going to a really hot movie, the theaters are almost empty.
This is good.
People
for
are watching at home, right? More bodies in seats makes the theater going experience good as long as there are available seats for other people.
How is this possible? I mean, really? They think most people won't even go to one movie?
I think they're monetizing with data.
Oh, so they're selling some data to the companies or something. Like Leo saw these four movies.
Yeah.
They were charging $30 a month. Then I can see how that might not, that's right on the edge.
Yeah.
But if they charge $10 a month.
Yeah, it's so low.
Now it depends where you live, but here in the Bay Area, a movie ticket is like $13.
Yeah.
So you're saving immediately.
Right.
You just have to go to one movie a month. Okay. Well, anyway, I pass that along to you. MoviePass.com. The site is, they need Cloudflare.
Yeah.
The site is so slow.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like, well, who wouldn't do this?
Right.
They had over a million hits yesterday.
Yeah.
Millions of hits yesterday.
I can't get on the site now to show it.
Variety actually has a really good article talking to them. So if you want to learn the history, the current status, and everything else.
And this is a guy who worked at Netflix in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So he's he's not like somebody out of nowhere. But I still don't understand why AMC hates this so much. But anyway. Yeah, the AMC's going to sue him.
Probably because people... It just makes the actual price of regular movies seem so high.
But remember that, unless I'm mistaken, the movie theater doesn't make money off the ticket. That goes to the movie producer. Right. They make money on the concessions.
Right.
So
After opening day, they make money. So after opening the first, that's why opening weekend's so big, is because most or all of the proceeds go to the producer. But then there's a split after the first weekend, I believe. Or that's how it used to be. I assume it's still sort of something like that.
Well, I want to, you know what? Let's try to get this guy in and ask him, what the hell? How are you doing this?
What the hell, man?
What the hell, man? Yeah. And Mitch Lowe is his name, co-founder of Netflix.
It sounds like they have SEC filings.
Oh, you know what? He took over from the previous owners. He just took over the service. A year ago, July 2016. So it existed before, but it sounds like he's the guy who said, let's make it $10. What do you say? What do you say? All right, everybody. Time has come for us to say goodbye to the family. Stacey Higginbotham's at IOTpodcast.com and Stacey on IOT at GigaStacey on the Twitter. Appreciate your time. Thank you for your tips and your good research and your good humor. Good luck on the trapeze.
Good luck with the circus.
Ta-da. That's my next career.
See you next week. We missed you on your vacation. That was hard. That was hard. Thank you so much, Mike Elgin.
Thank you.
Gastronomad.net.
Yep.
At Mike Elgin on the Twitter. Look for him on all over the place. Do you still post on Google Plus? Is that still a good place?
I do. Yeah.
I still follow you there. I like Google Plus now that all the people left.
You know, if
it's a lovable place.
There's no ads and doesn't have a harassment problem. It's pretty great.
It's quiet in there. It's like going to a park with lots of good pictures, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And articles and stuff like that. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday at about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Will you stop by and say hi? We would appreciate it. Watch at twit.tv/live. Do be in the chat room if you do that, because you know, you chat amongst yourselves and all that. irc.twit.tv. If you can't be here during the live performance, you can watch it on demand at your convenience. Go to twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. Do me a favor, subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.